Feeling lonely is a part of our evolutionary makeup. The emptiness in our chest is what drove our ancient ancestors to seek out others, form tribes, find mates, and face the terrors of nature together. But in our modern society, feeling alone is a shameful secret. In this episode, we're breaking down the concept of loneliness, why we feel it, why we're ashamed of it, and how chronic feelings of loneliness can actually change your brain chemistry for the worse. All this to answer the rude question, is everyone as lonely as I am? That's what you're in for today on Impolite Society.
You're listening to Impolite Society with Laura and Rachel.
We have to get a lot more somber. This is a serious topic that we're talking about today. If you want to throw on a British accent, I think that can only help.
Serious.
That was not the kind of British accent I was thinking of.
Crossickshire.
Yes, the Crossickshire is coming in here because if you're living in Crossickshire, you might be feeling what we're going to be talking about today. This is Impolite Society, the podcast that digs into the topics you cannot Google on your phone when squeezed between two nuns on the subway. I'm Rachel.
I'm Laura.
So today's topic, it's not a very sexy topic today, folks. That is unless you're a Victorian romance novel protagonist suffering and complicated.
We're all suffering and complicated. We're all the protagonist of our own Victorian romance novel.
But the topic we're talking about today might not be as sexy as cunnilingus or pickup lines, but it is definitely a taboo. Or at least it's not something you would run up and down that same subway train asking everybody if they feel the same way as you do.
Be funny if you did, though.
I would love it. I would be like, that would be a very interesting commute to work. So it's not sexy, it's taboo, and it's very timely because it is the heart of the cold, dark winter.
So cold, so dark. I hate winter. It's like 15 something degrees. I can't stand it.
Everybody's staying in. We're not going out. There is a new COVID variant on the scene. At least I'm assuming. We record these a couple weeks in advance, and it seems like every few weeks there's a new one. So I'm playing the odds that there's another one.
It's pi. I looked it up. It's pi.
Pi. Pi.
If we get a pi variant, oh my God, guys, the memes. Can you imagine the memes with the pi variant?
Well, it's certainly happening by the time this episode is released. So we're locked down again. The world's shut down. And it's cold, dark winter. We just celebrated another COVID Christmas, an especially bad one, right? Because this is what, COVID Christmas number two?
Yeah.
And this one was rougher, I feel like, than the first one because of that new variant that shut down a lot of travel. People were alone. I looked at the Google trends for the topic today, and one of the top Google trends from December was Lonely This Christmas by Elvis Presley. There were so many people Googling it. I mean, every new episode that I dig into is just a new way to make me feel horrible and sad. And this one definitely delivered. This is a comedy podcast, folks. But if you haven't guessed it by this conversation or the title that you clicked on, we are talking about loneliness.
And this is a topic that we actually covered in early 2020, just the beginning of the pandemic. And I think this deserves an update since a lot has changed since then, including the show. We used to be Big Talk, and you might find this deep into our show archives, but we see that a lot of people are looking at that old show, Big Talk, and that's a completely different format.
Who is the psychopath saw the negative numbers and was like, yes, I want to go back before?
And about 20% of our new listeners are the psychopaths.
Guys. Okay, I'm a podcast listener. You never start at the beginning because you have to build the relationship before you listen to that garbage.
And yeah, the first ones are always the worst ones.
Yeah, so come hang with us when we're polished and we're tight. We're keeping it tight loose with us at the end. Anyways, moral of the story, we talked about loneliness in the past and we're coming back to it because it's so relevant. And don't worry, this isn't a rerun. This isn't putting the lipstick on the pig situation. This is all new research, all new angle. But I did want to start out in a true Impolite Society fashion, kind of a harking back to our earlier format, where I actually ask Laura the question that we're going to be digging into. So, Laura, I have to ask, are you lonely?
Yes.
You're lonely?
I am. Yes. I've been working at home for 2 years, and I don't have those same interactions that I used to have in my everyday work life. I've got a kid now, which is a really lonely experience. Nobody really prepped me for that, about how lonely that was going to be, because you spend so much time with them and not a lot of time connecting with people. And I'm older, my social circle is smaller, and when people are busy, like my three friends are busy, I'm like, womp womp. Here I am, me and Frasier on the couch again.
Love Frasier.
And yeah, I'm lonely. What about you, Rachel?
Oh man, I feel great.
Well, great for you.
Work, I know, I suck, but working from home, I get to spend more time with my husband. Even throughout the pandemic, I've been able to keep in touch with the relationships that have been the deepest throughout my life. I've lost a lot of relationships over the course of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Just through the more casual relationships, not casual, but people I saw socially as opposed to the people that I saw in like a more deeper conversation.
Totally.
And I miss them. But at the end of the day, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. But I will say, today kind of reminded me a little bit. I felt a little like retroactive loneliness because I was able to go out with a good friend of mine today. We went to the garden and got lunch after. And I'll just say, I know she's a listener. Hey, Ez. Thank you for listening. I'm talking about you. And it made me realize how much I didn't miss those kind of interactions. But on a bigger scale, I don't feel lonely.
Well, good. I'm glad that you don't. Some of us, we are, which is probably why we clicked on this episode.
Well, that's true. I know. Here I'm like, hey, lonely people, I'm living a great life.
Hey, losers.
This is how you could be more like me. So I had a feeling that you would feel the way that you feel. We're in very similar situations. We both work at home. Granted, you have a little baby, and I have a 28-year-old baby that's married to. But we're in similar situations. How did we come to such different sides of loneliness? And that is, and I can say with confidence, because it's a lot like humanity and the fact that loneliness is super complicated.
Complicated. Like everything we cover on this show, it's super complicated.
In this episode today, we are going to explore how we evolved to be lonely and how our society has reinforced loneliness and where our current trajectory might be taking us.
Straight to the lonely ass dumpster.
But first, what is loneliness and why do we feel it? We all know what lonely feels. Let's not play. Everybody has been lonely at least one point in their life.
Absolutely. It's heartbreaking. It's sad. It's gut-wrenching.
We know it when we feel it, but the term loneliness itself can be a little tricky to define in concrete and, I don't know, maybe like clever terms that you would then write on a Google Doc to say out loud on your podcast. But here's a few concrete facts we can pin down about loneliness. It stems from being apart from other humans. So at its core, loneliness is about being alone.
But it's more than that, right? Because just being physically apart from other humans isn't the only thing about loneliness.
You're right. Solitude, it's not just the capital of the Hafinga hold. It's also
what's the Hafinga hold?
Hafinga. It is a district of Skyrim. That's a deep cut for our Skyrim fans. I feel like we have at least one. If you got that reference, let us know. Send us an email, rude@impolitesocietypodcast.com. But it's more than that. Solitude is also a word for being alone, but it does not carry the same weight as loneliness.
No, I feel like solitude is what you like seek out. People never say, I need loneliness.
No.
They say, I need to be alone, away from other people.
Yes. Solitude is something to pursue, to seek out, to find in nature, to practice self-care. Solitude and loneliness are two very different concepts. So loneliness is more than just being alone. It is an emotion. Psychologists define it as the distress or pain that comes from a lack of meaningful connection to other people.
Ugh, yeah. And I've definitely been there.
Oh, who hasn't, right? Humans come with loneliness and vice versa. What makes loneliness distinct from simply being alone? And the first piece is what we talked about, that pain, the painfulness of it. So anyone who's ever felt lonely knows it fucking hurts. It hurts. Heavy heart, chest pain. That's what I feel. What do you feel when you're lonely?
Totally. I've always wondered that because that heartache is such a literal thing. When you're young, I feel like you read it in books and you think it's just hyperbolic, but it is. It's physical. It's like an emptiness in your chest. And I've always wondered what the hell that is all about, the biology behind that. I know that we don't have that detailed of research in this, but like why does it physically hurt in your chest when you feel that emotion? I've always wondered that.
Well, I think it comes down to the core of it. We talk about that puts us into the high stress, the fight or flight that affects your heart rate and your blood pressure.
Yeah.
But it's more than just those initial biological impacts. Feeling lonely over a long stretch of time can really affect your health. So it's painful in the moment and it really can hurt you in the long run. Loneliness is also about what's going on in our own heads. So to an outside observer, you can't watch somebody and 100% accurately prescribe if someone's lonely or not, right? It's not something we can see from the outside. Somebody who is surrounded by people who has a very active social life, who has a family and kids and a spouse, they can still feel lonely. And why is that? That is because loneliness isn't defined by your proximity to other people, even though that's a component of it. Being around other people is kind of the initial base there, but it comes from connection or the lack thereof. So you can have hundreds of people in your life, but if you don't feel like any of them get you, you're going to feel socially isolated.
That's more where I've fallen. I've definitely been in this scenario where you are surrounded by people, but you don't feel understood and you don't feel like you fit in. And that lack of fitting in is what leads to loneliness. And I felt this so acutely when I first entered the corporate world, so hard. I felt so outside of everything that was going on.
Yeah, I've been in those same shoes. This is a throwback to that old episode of ours in The Negatives where I felt the most lonely in college and I was constantly surrounded by people who were on paper appropriate to be my friends. But because of feeling separated from that demographic, I was very lonely.
It's something that comes from deep in our psychology. And you might have actually a ton in common with these people, but for whatever reason, you're not able to express it. You're not able to make those connections for so many different reasons. And so it's actually sometimes it's a little bit self-imposed, right?
Definitely. And that's where the perception comes in, because it's not just about being around people who even have something in common with you. It's how you feel you are relating to those people. So you could have every friend in the world. You could have deep, meaningful conversations. But if you expect something more, you're not going to be satisfied by it, which is why loneliness is such an interesting thing to unpack, which is why this research is insane. I like went really far down the rabbit hole. I had stuff to say.
You pulled the Laura. You went down the rabbit hole. You went through a billion different tabs. And you're like, I got shit to tell y'all.
This is one of the few episode researchers that I've ever like had a message to. This is my TED talk. So I'm going to move the mic very close to my mouth. And I'm going to make a lot of mouth sounds and breath sounds. Because that's why is it that a TED talk always sounds like this?
Shitty mic control. That's why.
It's like, just move it a little farther from their faces. It's like literally every talk. It's
part
like,
ASMR, part motivational speaking.
Truly, it blows my mind. Anyways, after doing podcast audio production for 2 years, I'm just like, move the mic a little farther from their mouth. But I think it's part of their brand. You know, is it a TED Talk if you don't hear a every time? I don't know. That's for the geniuses at TED to tell us. So Here's the thing, is we all feel lonely. We've all been lonely. We've all felt those things. But staying in that state of distress for prolonged periods of time can seriously wreck your physical health. Chronic loneliness can reduce your life. This blew my mind. Can reduce your life more than being a smoker, right? Excessive drinker. And on average, can take 5 times more years off your life than being obese.
That is definitely surprising, especially smoking. We've been told that that is the absolute worst thing in the world to do for your health, but apparently being lonely and depressed is even worse. Where's that PSA?
And I think that factors into something we're going to talk about here in a second. But yeah, it is. And apparently being obese only on average takes 3 years off your life. So I say roll the dice on that. That's nothing.
Yeah. I'll enjoy that cake.
I mean, what's the difference between 90 and 93? Get the fuck yeah. over yourself.
I'm going to get that cheesecake.
So, okay, if loneliness is literally killing us, why the hell did we evolve to feel lonely? Like, is this some accident? Is this some mistake in this grand plan of human evolution? No, it's actually very important to our development. And it's not really a stretch to understand why we're so motivated to seek out other humans.
Especially if you listen to this show a lot. You know what we're going to say.
It comes up all the time. Like, look at us. We're fucking little flesh babies in the world. We don't have a lot of strength. We don't have a lot of teeth. Mm-hmm. Our literal ability to survive is 100% dictated by our ability to depend on our relationships. Our relationships and our ability to connect and work together is what has made our species into the apex species it is today.
Strength in numbers.
And it's linked to our survival. Our social relationships are our survival, which is, side note, why emotional abuse is literally the same thing as physical abuse, because being socially rejected meant death. Science has shown that being rejected socially triggers the same parts in our brain as physical pain.
You know I got shit to say about that.
I know. Yeah, that's why I threw it in there. I was baiting you.
I mean, I would argue that the emotional scars that I felt are very different from the physical scars I have on my body. Like, I would never say that my emotional familial abuse as a child would anywhere compare to somebody who was literally beaten by their parents as a child. That's all I'll say about that. Continue. I get the general gist, though, that absolutely, emotional trauma has an effect on us. I agree with that, and we'll move on.
It literally highlights the same part of the brains as physical pain. So
I believe it.
Threatening somebody's social standing, where let's say the silent treatment, you're giving somebody the silent treatment. If you are somebody's main support system and you stop talking to them, that is the same as like getting in their face and yelling at them. It's saying like, I have the means to end your life by either physically killing you or isolating you socially.
Cutting you out of the group, thus leaving you to die.
Yeah, which is why, friends, never give your child the silent treatment. I don't know. I don't feel like that's a harsh thing to take.
That's a whole nother podcast.
I know. That's what I said. This is a whole nother conversation. But I had to throw it in there because I knew it would bait Laura. And that's like, what am I doing if I'm not trying to antagonize my co-host? It's fine. But the drive for human connection is a biological need, or at least our brain considers it to be. A study from MIT found that after fasting, they had a group of participants, half of them fasted food-wise, the other half fasted socially, and they found that our socially starved brains responded to images of people interacting in the same way that the food-starved brains interacted to pictures of food.
That is fascinating.
And along like the same lines, those who were socially starved had a stronger reaction to the interaction. So we crave human interaction more than we crave a McDouble. So this tells us that loneliness is like a physical need. Like hunger motivates us to get off our asses and go to the fridge and get a snack, or that pressure in our bladders tells us, oh, you got to go to the bathroom, better find a toilet. And the cold makes us seek out somewhere warm and cozy this time of year.
A little fire where you can also associate with people.
Well, yes, definitely. The desire for safety from the dark, from the cold, pushes us to other humans. But the idea that loneliness, it encourages us to seek out others because being around others is good for our survival. This is a biological urge. So why is loneliness a taboo? If it's something we need to survive, I mean, sure. Sure, there's other taboos around biological needs. Society tells us all the time. Our social scripts tell us when it's okay to go to the bathroom, where we can go to the bathroom, who we can and can't get down and dirty with, and of course, what we can and can't eat. But none of these rules fault you for having the feeling in the first place. So yeah. Why is loneliness something that's shameful? That feeling lonely is something we can never admit to feeling, or we don't want to admit to feeling.
Yeah, no one's ever ashamed to say, I gotta take a piss, or I'm cold.
Or I'm hungry.
Yeah, totally normal things.
But this stigma can have real effects. It's part of the reason that studying loneliness is so hard, because people don't admit they're lonely.
It's the whole self-reported thing. People don't want to talk about it, so they'll say they're happier than they are.
Exactly. We will say that other people seem lonely, but we won't say that ourselves are lonely. And I mean, this is not just a speculation, right? This is what we call a classic study, which means it was a study done in like the 90s, and it's very heavily cited in the research today. But one of those classic studies found that people rate lonely people lower in the terms of psychological adjustment, so how adjusted they are, and achievement and competence, like they're not well achieved, they're not very competent people, and their sociability or congeniality. They're not going to be good at getting along with people. So if you're perceived as lonely, you're not good at what you do, you're not adjusted, and you're not good at interacting with other people. So that's a very real stigma. And that just makes me curious. Why does that exist?
I think it has something to do with that weak animal in the herd, the one that has the broken leg. I mean, I see it with my cats. When one of them will come back from the vet, Bug, one time he had an extended hospital stay, and he came back, and I had to put my other cat in another part of the house and closed the door because he was picking on him. He could sense that weakness, and weakness needs to be culled from the herd. I think it has something to do with that. If you openly admit your loneliness, your inability to connect with other people, there's some lizard part of our brain that assumes then that there's something wrong with you. So then I also don't want to associate with you. And then it perpetuates itself. You know, if you're lonely, well, I don't want to be around you because you're not worth being around. And the cycle continues forever and ever. And I'd like to think that we're more evolved than that. But I think that we aren't as much as we'd like to be. It's like that picking on the weakling. It's a little bit of an instinct inside of us.
Well, I will say that the testimonial is a very effective, influential device to say, like, other people like this, so I like
exactly.
It. And the flip side, you've been around people your whole...
Nobody likes
it. I don't really want to get involved in that. And when we get into the kind of psychological effects of loneliness, it might make sense to not want to associate with people who are lonely. But in this case, it like you said, it's a vicious cycle where somebody else tried it and didn't like it. We're also like,
nope,
I don't think I'm going to.
There's only a 1-star review on this on Amazon. I'm not going to take the risk.
And I think that's really what it comes down to is, like we talked about, our survival is based on our ability to relate and get along to others. So even if it's not like, oh, I don't want to engage with somebody that other people have not given a hot Yelp review to, it's also the point of saying the base thing that keeps our species alive, I'm not excelling at. And there's shame in that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a fundamental flaw. They are unable to do the thing that makes us successful, so I don't want anything to do with it.
Exactly. I just don't want to admit that I am experiencing this huge fundamental flaw that's separating me from all of my ancestors. But it's not maybe so much of a flaw as we think it is, because society might be pushing us into feeling more lonely. And we're going to get into that after this break. Society is changing. And again, as we talk about all the time, we live in a fucking caveman paradise. Like, this is not the world we were meant to live in. So there's things that are happening that I think are pushing us, in, more of us, into being lonely.
Well, I think that probably the amount of people who clicked on this episode would agree with you. I mean, this is something that happens. Even though we're stigmatizing people for it, for feeling it, we know we've all felt it at some time or another. So really, we're all a bunch of hypocrites, like pointing at each other saying, you're lonely and I want nothing to do with you. I'm lonely too.
Well, truly, it's all still the playground politics where it's like, I'm going to try to be in with the cool kids, but I don't want to be associated with the kids that nobody else wants to hang out with. But I still feel like those kids. I still relate to those kids. It's all crazy because we still all have the drive to seek out and surround ourselves with tight-knit relationships. That drive is as old as humanity itself. But it turns out the concept of loneliness is actually much more recent. The first mention of loneliness in Western literature actually started emerging in the 1600s, which on the grand scheme of like 200,000 years of evolution.
That's so late.
It's very recent. This is where the first use of that term actually comes from. Like loneliness, the concept did not exist before then. I mean,
that's bizarre.
The feeling existed for sure, but the term and the idea of being lonely and apart was not existing before then. So, fun fact, quiz time. Can you guess the very first ever lonely character to appear in Western literature?
So, 1600s, I'm not great at historical literature.
Do you want a clue?
Sure.
It is a character from John Milton's 1667 epic poem, Paradise Lost.
I mean, I've heard the term Paradise Lost. I know it is a literary thing of some nature, but I have never read it.
I got nothing.
It is Satan.
Oh!
Ding, 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 ding. Satan himself is the first character depicted as lonely.
Oh, of and course he was. Let's make it even worse than it is. You feel lonely. You know who else feels lonely? Satan.
That's a different reaction than I had because when I heard that, I was like, oh, that made Satan even sexier than he was before. And if you feel the same way that I do, you too might have been ruined by the patriarchy. I can fix him.
I can fix Satan. I mean, all he needs is a wonderful woman to love him.
He just needs to know somebody cares about him.
I don't think that's what the Bible was going for.
But that's another conversation. But even still, after Satan became the first lonely character in 1667, it was still a rare concept. And it had to do with the fact that life was still very much based on cooperative efforts back then, right? Mm-hmm. You could not have skated through life on your own. Like, you fucking needed people around you to help.
You're farming, you're prepping for the winter.
Yeah. And the fact that you like lived in a one-room house with seven other people, at least that was the minimum household.
You're all sleeping in a dog pile like a bunch of puppies.
Yeah. Honestly, solitude was a luxury. So what changed? A British historian quoted in The New Yorker in an article all about the evolution of loneliness. They surmised that the introduction of loneliness also is tied into the rise of capitalism and the rise of the philosophy of individualism. And this was all tied into the fact that, like we said, solitude, privacy was a commodity that you could buy and aspire for. So essentially, having a house full of 8-10 people, that was something for the poor.
Yeah.
And that if you are affluent, you have space, you have room to yourself. And that began the divide of public and private life, where in the days before that, everything was public. You know, the ancient Greeks bathed together.
Yeah.
There literally was no privacy. Ancient castles had like toilet rooms where everybody would sit together and shit.
You shit together, you stay together.
That's a true statement. We need to have more multi-toilet rooms.
That's the solution.
In modern society. The
solution to loneliness. Public toilets. No stalls.
So it was also around this time that you start to see the rise of smaller households and of people living alone. That crowdedness, that was undesirable. That was literally for people who could not afford better.
And I would argue to tie this down to capitalism and individualism, I feel like that might be a little bit of a stretch because the idea if you are surrounded by 10 other people, you're poor, you're struggling constantly, do you have time to feel that loneliness? Like, you're so invested in that ultimate goal of survival. Do you have time to self-reflect on the individual, your needs and wants, and then look up and see that the people around you and your family don't necessarily fit those needs? I would argue that it is something to do with not necessarily capitalism, but the rise of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, those lower needs have been met in more modern society, so we have more time to focus on those upper needs. That would be a good thing. It's enabled us to focus on our higher needs.
And this has created the increase of single-person households, which was unheard of. A couple centuries ago, nobody lived alone. Even kings lived in courts and had people around them that they liked, right? Essentially. But as the society progressed and people became more wealthy, as the idea of privacy as a commodity became a thing, people started living alone or living in smaller groups. Mm. And you can see that, like, to this day, countries that are less wealthy have more people living together. In countries that are very wealthy, have less people living together, right? A lot more single family households. So the United States specifically, we have seen a skyrocketing of single person households. And that went from 15% of all households had one person in the 1960s to almost 30% today.
So this means, like, not single family, but like one individual home or home.
One person living in a household has 100% increased in the past 60 years. And around the world, for comparison, you'll see that single person households in Europe and especially in Scandinavian countries are way higher. So they can see up to 40% of households include one individual. Whereas other countries, as in like Latin America, only one out of 10 would have a single person household. And so while single person households have skyrocketed, loneliness has also followed the similar trajectory. So today, a study has found that 36% of Americans feel lonely. And depending on what you consume, that number is higher or lower. It's usually around there, sometimes higher, 40% or more.
That sounds low to me. 36% sounds low.
Well, that's across the board. And you will find that younger people, young adults, are more significantly impacted, as well as mothers of young children.
What? Back to what I was saying. Something nobody preps you for.
So what is causing this loneliness? We're seeing this increase in loneliness over time. It's up to 36%, if not higher, compared to in the 80s when they estimated that it would be about half of that. So loneliness is on the rise. And obviously, it's not just based on people living alone. That is a causation correlation situation here. Like, I don't think that people living on their own is what is causing this loneliness epidemic, which is a term that I didn't cause.
Maybe a little bit. I do think of sometimes, especially during the pandemic, I thought about how lonely I felt at home with my husband. And I was like, if you lived alone during this, woof. I thought about that a lot, about how awful it would be to be isolated at home with no one to bitch at or bitch about.
Yes, the bitching about is a very critical piece of the humanity of the whole situation. It's like, I need someone to complain about.
Yeah.
Common enemy numero uno. That's why God invented spouses. But okay, so yeah, there might be a connection there, but there's a ton of other things that have also changed over the past 60 years, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just our living situations. It's not just how sad we feel about being alone. We could sit here and list all day everything that's changed, right? The differentiator of a public and private life, the breakdown of many social institutions like social clubs,
churches.
Yeah. People aren't going to those kind of things anymore. The internet stepping on the scene, that was a huge development for social interaction, as well as smartphones and everybody's favorite thing to shit on, social media. But is it any one of those things? Maybe a combination of them? Or are all of these just a symptom of us trying to solve for the loneliness that we had in the first place?
My theory is combo breaker. Combo. Always.
Yeah, it's where it's nothing's ever super clean and cut.
No.
Where our society, the way it's pushing us between the individual focus and all of these other kind of shortcuts for interacting is kind of pushing us down the pipeline of loneliness. And we were on this trajectory. People were already writing about or talking about the loneliness epidemic in 2019. Modern society has been deemed as this thing that's causing loneliness for decades. And then enter the big daddy of all loneliness, what we just talked about with quarantining. COVID-19 jumps in and pushes us to be even more socially isolated than we were before.
I don't see how it could not impact our social lives. They talk about how kids now, like, their anxiety levels are higher than ever. How could it not have a huge impact on younger generations? Like, I see a bunch of TikToks about how kids, probably about your age, I guess, that were saying, oh, 9/11 damaged me, watching it on television. And I'm thinking, what are the TikToks or the whatever new version of TikTok we'll experience in 20 years that people are going to be saying, I'm damaged because I spent, you know, the formative years of my life being isolated and pushed home and slapped on a mask and keeping six feet away from people. How could that not impact you?
Well, yeah, and I think the ones who are going to see the most damage from that are the ones who don't have a voice yet. The kids don't see faces outside of those most close to them or don't get to interact with people. I think those are the ones who are going to have the most damage. And yes, as traumatizing as 9/11 was and as how much of a heartbreaking situation it was.
Yeah, this is something different. This affects development.
Just being exposed to different people. Or maybe it's reverting us back to our more primal roots, because the only people you're really encountering are your tribe. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over the next couple decades when these pandemic babies come of age. But pandemic aside, there's no doubt that this is a growing issue, right? We are all feeling more lonely than we used to before. And I don't think it's an individual failing. This isn't like you are the lonely person on your serfdom land. Society is shifting. It's pushing more of us into situations where we are feeling alone. But what exactly is causing that? And we will explore that question right after this break. But what is causing it? And this makes me ask the question, are we as humanity as a whole hurtling towards a crisis of comfort where we are not able to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations anymore because loneliness is changing our brains?
Tell me more, because I have a lot of thoughts on this crisis of comfort thing.
Yeah, and I think that it stems from the fact that humans, where I think most animals, anybody who's living with any kind of vague consciousness, we're going to have a negativity bias where the bad things that happen to us carry more weight so we can avoid them and learn from them in the future, as opposed to like the good things, right?
This is a survival mechanism, like you said.
Oh, totally.
You look back on these things and focus on these things because by analyzing them and reliving them, you are going to avoid them in the future. You know, we talk about focus on the good, focus on the good. It's like, okay, that's a great thing to aspire to, but it's literally not how our brains work. If we were all la 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 and only focusing on the good, that tiger and rustling in the bushes is gonna snap your ass.
And so when we have bad social interactions, those are the social interactions that we replay over and over again late at night when we're trying to go to sleep or when we're sitting in traffic. And that compounds to loneliness, because the more removed we feel from other people, the more vigilant we get. The further you go, the more you notice those negative experiences or those quote unquote threats, because your brain, as we talked about, social connectivity is your lifeline. Mm-hmm. So if you don't think that you have that, you're going to be more on edge. And this is where that stress starts to come into the picture. And when you're stressed, you're looking for threats. And when you're looking for threats, you see threats.
So it's compounded. And uneasy, because you don't feel connected and because you're feeling uneasy, you're having a hard time making connections because all of these stress hormones are firing at 1,000 degrees.
Well, yeah, yeah. You're looking for that tiger, but there's no tiger, right?
Yeah.
So you're seeing like everything that your boss says is a sign that they hate you and they're going to fire you at the first chance they get. Or that person that you met at that party way back when, they hated you. Everybody was like, oh God, that person's a nightmare. I don't want to be around them. So the more you're on edge, the more you notice these kind of things and the more they stay in your head, and it encourages you to not want to be...
not put yourself out there.
Yeah, it makes you defensive, right? Your brain is on the defense. So the idea here is that the more stressed you are about your social interactions, the more you call out those negative ones, and it makes you more stressed, mm-hmm. right? And living in that high stress mindset actually changes the chemistry of your brain and how your brain is wired.
I mean, they say that like high levels of cortisol have huge impacts on your whole body.
How the brain changes is that lonelier brains become less empathetic and compassionate. Which is like totally fair, right? Because if the plane's going down, put on your own oxygen mask before you put on others.
So you're in such a high stress mode, you can't worry about anybody else. You're so focused on you because you're like dying of cortisol and stress and anxiety. So you can't worry about anybody else.
Exactly. Your brain is in fight or flight in the mm-hmm. moment where you can't focus on anything other than self-preservation.
Yeah.
So that self-preservation makes you very self-focused. Mm-hmm. And this has been proven in studies where one study found that people who self-reported as lonely, they had smaller gray matter volume in the PSTS cluster. I'm not a neuro person, but from what I can understand, that this is the part of the brain that plays into social perception. And that same study also found that this change, whether that was by the brain changing from them being lonely or the fact that maybe they were born with this smaller matter in the cluster and that's what drove them to have the social disconnect. But either way, this thing that existed in their brain made it harder for them to read social cues and it lowered their eye gaze processing. So they had a harder time recognizing people's like eye movements.
Hmm. So less general awareness of other people because they're so focused on themselves.
Whatever happened altered their brain, whether they were born that way and that caused them to be lonely, or they were so lonely that their brain changed, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Another study found that those on the social fringe saw less brain activity in the empathetic part of their brain when shown photos of socially stressful situations.
I believe this. All of this tracks with the people that I know in my life that are definitely lonely. There is less awareness or less interest even in other people. And I always thought that it was because they spend so much time only with themselves. So that is like more the center of their universe than anybody else. Though we're all our own main characters, right? We're always at the center of our own story.
Oh, for sure.
But people who don't have to share that spotlight with anybody else, that they're just more focused on themselves. So that's why they only want to talk about themselves and they like curbtail the conversation to come back around to them. I always thought that's just because they weren't used to talking or thinking about anybody else. I had never considered the fact that literally this high level of cortisol and stress have redirected their thoughts back to themselves. That's really interesting to me. It makes me want to be a lot more empathetic, but it's also yes. really annoying and hard to deal with.
That's the thought behind it, is that if you're on your own, you're only going to look out for your number one, which is yourself, because that's how you've gotten so far.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting way of looking at loneliness because your brain is literally changing to be worse at social interactions and to become more self-centered.
And yeah, so a feedback loop of forever, which means people are going to be able to relate to you less. You're going to have less successful social interactions, thus making you feel more lonely, and around you go.
And when those interactions go wrong, you're going to be very attuned to them and you're going to think that they're going wrong because other people don't get you, that nobody
yeah,
relates to
you. Not that there's anything wrong with me, but they just don't get me.
And that is where our brand new friend enters the scene. Social anxiety.
Oh, I hear this word a lot.
It's a very popular word right now. And I used to look at it. I used to look at it negatively, too. But then I started doing this research and I was like, oh, shit, that actually makes a lot of sense. Where it was like I used to like low key judge people who were like, I have social anxiety. But then I've started to realize that it's maybe not their fault. And it's more of a symptom of the society that we live in. And that goes down to the fact that our brains are getting damaged by the loneliness that we're encountering. So by experiencing social anxiety, it's not a failing on you. It's just a symptom of our greater society. Or, in other words, just because you're a lonely fish doesn't mean you're a loner fish.
You're going to have to explain that. But also, it gives a little bit more credence because I do see a lot more younger people talk about their social anxiety a lot more. And that is a good point. They grew up in a very different time and place than I did.
And that plays into how their brains are developed, right?
Which
makes it not their fault. And that is proven by the study that I was referencing when I said loner fish versus lonely fish. Because this is a study that compared the brains of lonely versus loner zebrafish. And the differentiator there is the lonely fish were normally developmentally fish who like to be social that they took out of a social situation.
They took them out of their school. Oh, no, God, it's COVID all over again.
They took them out and they put them on their own and they had to live on their own for a long time versus the loner fish, which were fish that were born into the school who displayed behavior of wanting to be on their own.
Okay.
So they took these lonely fish versus the loner fish. And what they saw is that the lonely fish still did prefer the social interaction even after being socially isolated, but they had an increased activity in the areas of their brain related to stress and anxiety.
The loner fish, the one that preferred to be alone?
The loner fish was the same.
Oh, he was fine.
Yeah, because they took him out and they put him back in. That fish stayed the same. But the lonely fish they took out and left on its own that wanted to be around the other fish. And then once they put that fish back in, the lonely fish became anxious and very sensitive to stimuli. The lonely fish had a hard time interacting with its other zebrafish that it wanted to be friends with.
This is making me sad.
It is sad. But the good the good news here that most of our Gen Z friends already have found out that once you start to give these lonely fish drugs that reduce anxiety, they begin to fit right back in. So it's like our brains are adjusted to being in that high stress, like survival mode. But once you reduce that, they're able to reaccumulate to society. And that's something that I feel that a lot of younger folks are experiencing. And I think it's because society is pushing them to be alone, right? Based on whatever the compounding factors are. And from there, they're having to find their way back to being social with the help of medicine. Prescription medicine. That's wild.
Well, it is wild, but props, though, for the people who will actually go and get medicated and get help for. I begrudge absolutely no one who gets medicated for the problems because, hello, hi, medicated here, and it helps me function in my everyday life. I always get butthurt about people who are like, I have social anxiety and I can't do this. I'm like, okay, well, what are you doing about it? You know, if it's something that impacts your life, you should be getting medicine for it. There's no shame in getting the help that you need. I think there is shame to bitch about it endlessly and be hamstrung
and
by it and do
it.
Nothing about it except for
well,
bitch on the internet about it.
Well, it's easy to do that, right? Because luckily, there's a place for all of us, right? There's a place where we can always be right and be in full control of our interactions and think through and perfectly form every clever clapback that we want before actually sharing it with other humans. And that is this beautiful world of social media.
My least favorite media.
And yet you're our social media person for the podcast.
I know. I know. I do it constantly and I fucking hate
it. And
yeah,
and that's because social media, you can't have this conversation about loneliness without bringing in social media, even in a very quick way that I'm bringing in today, because it's like, I don't want to talk about social media too much. But the idea behind it is that studies show that social media is actually making us way less social. And we talk about this U curve of people who don't use it feel lonely and then moderate users feel less lonely. The people who use it all the time are the most lonely.
It's So those are the people who have social anxiety. They can go on Twitter. They can control every interaction.
Think about our TikToks. Our TikToks are perfectly cultivated for our individual interest and beliefs.
And then you get something that's outside of your algorithm that doesn't perfectly fit. And you're like, what?
So social media, right? Because you can craft your own world. You can literally shape your own algorithm and shape the content that you get. So has this protected us from being uncomfortable? Because we can stay within our bubbles and get our dopamine through our perfect interactions that we can cultivate in our minds.
Oh, I think absolutely. Everything outside of my perfect bubble is anxiety inducing. So I'm just going to stay in my bubble and do nothing. And that's terrifying.
It is. And to me, this is perfectly summarizing what is going on in our society from like a micro and a macro viewpoint, which is like hella academic of me, macro, micro.
Whoa, micro, macro.
But okay, so this lifestyle, right, is breeding this level of loneliness that's seriously killing us. It's killing people.
Might as well light up a cigarette.
Exactly. Like, apparently, it's not it does not make a difference. Like, whatever. Do what you need to do. But as a whole, it's creating people who are so damaged from this stress that they need medicine to interact with other people.
Or they could just have a glass of wine.
Truly. Just social lubricant. But then on the
it is.
But then on the other side, we're literally creating sociopaths who can't empathize with people enough to, I don't know, take minor precautions to maybe prevent the spread of an infectious disease.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. I think at the very core of the issue is the way we are living is killing us. And we're not trying to stop it. Because people will always die. In any given era of history, people are dying in mass. And yeah. I think that we have traded that gross, visceral death for a clean, polite, solitary death where, you know, at least we're not shitting ourselves until we die. We're sitting in a clean, solitary place that we own by ourselves. And
we're isolating ourselves to death.
Exactly. And we're just sitting there with this self-created self-perception of stress to the point where our brains are concaving in on itself. Jeez. Until we literally dive headfirst into our own early graves.
Well, this is just a cheery summation. Oh, geez. Well, what do we do about it?
Well, I think that that's the thing, right? Is when we get back to that question at the top, is everyone as lonely as I am? Or is everyone lonely, right?
And I think to some degree, yeah.
Yeah, odds are most of the people you encounter, or at least upwards of half, are as lonely as you are. And that loneliness is measured as often or always. So these are people who are always or often lonely. And if you look at sometimes, it's way higher.
Yeah.
So everybody is lonely or feeling lonely at some point, and that's because it's the way our society is set up. And this should be liberating. This should set us free, because why feel the stigma of being lonely when I know everybody else is? And this could literally help free us from this loneliness if we just take a compassionate view to other lonely people.
Mm-hmm.
So ditch the idea of a sad, lonely person and think of them as somebody who needs a helping hand. When you encounter someone who seems lonely, think of them as somebody starving. You wouldn't see someone starving on the street and think, oh, I'm not going to give them this bread that I have, because they're in the situation where they created it themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, especially with you bring into like that research about how that anxiety creates that self-centeredness and that difficulty. Like I said, I know a lot of people in my life that have some of these criteria, specifically family, that have these traits. And I've always just been like, ugh. And so it does give me a mind to maybe think a little bit differently. Though, to be fair, it is a hard thing to jump over against. If somebody is super negative and super self-absorbed, it is hard to connect with them because that's just where their brain is all the time. But maybe it gives a good reminder to keep trying.
Yeah, to give them a little bit of compassion. And I think the real message here, which we're not an advice podcast. But if you are listening to this and you're new to the show, I'm going to guess that you clicked on it because you might be feeling lonely.
Like the rest of us.
You might be feeling something that, like Laura's describing about, where you feel like people aren't connecting with you, or you're feeling like they're distant. And that may be because they're recognizing some of those traits that Laura talked about. And we can keep trying, keep offering a hand. But if you're feeling lonely most of the time, it's going to be more on you to try to correct that than it is for someone. You can't expect somebody to come and save you from this chronic
loneliness. You can't be Satan. You can't be sitting around waiting for some girl to fix you.
Some hot girl with a podcast and bangs, new bangs, to come in and lift you out of there.
You got
to
do it yourself. Got to pull up your bootstraps and do it yourself.
But how are you going to do it? And that's the question, right? And this is where it comes back down to the fundamentals that every human has experienced. We all have this in common. So think back to potty training, right? Identifying and correcting loneliness is the same as learning how to use a toilet. Step one, recognize. Know what you're feeling.
I have to pee.
Yeah. When you feel that pressure in your bladder, you know you have to go to the bathroom. So when you're feeling sad, isolated, cut off, removed, whatever your indicator is, recognize it. Like, learn to recognize that that is a sign of loneliness. Two, understand what's happening. You feel the pressure in your bladder, you understand that that means you have to pee. So not only know the symptoms, but understand the cause of it. This is a key component of what makes us human, is our ability to interact and our desire to be connected to each other. Understand what's happening when you feel this discomfort.
And don't be so hard on yourself, too, because I think this is maybe where a lot of people get tripped up. Like, they understand where it's coming from, but they feel like there's something wrong with them. And it's like, no, there's nothing wrong with you. This is literally how we were made to function. There's nothing wrong with you for feeling this way. It's a part of being a human being.
Exactly. This is literally just a component of who we are. Like, you get hungry, you need calories. You feel pressure in your bladder, you gotta pee. It's a natural part. It's a biological part of living. So that when you recognize it and understand what's happening, you can take the appropriate response.
Go to the potty chair.
It's time to go sit your ass on that little potty chair and let it go. Or in this case, focus on your relationships, right? And connection. So you can focus on your intimate connections, which is, of course, going to always be about quality over quantity. You don't need to be the most popular person in the world. I am surely not. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I don't feel very lonely because I have quality connections with the folks in my life.
Whoever your support system is and the people that you are supporting as well, those are the people that you need to reach out to and recharge your batteries.
Yeah, try to take the conversation a bit further because you need that confidant. You need that intimate connection. Because what you talked about there is those are your relational connections. So your family, the people you see the most often, because knowing you have the support system in there is going to help with that as well.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. So you might have relational connections, but you can turn those into more intimate conversations, definitely, more intimate connection that charges that battery faster. Because just being in close proximity or having a conversation about the weather with your mom is not the same as having an intimate conversation with your mom about your hopes and dreams and fears and hearing about her hopes, dreams, and fears.
Exactly. You need the first level support system to know that, like, if your car breaks down, you have somebody who will come pick you up. But then you need that more intimate connection as well to be able to talk about those deeper things and feel not just like you're talking about it. It's the fact that you have that deeper connection with somebody that is helping.
Yeah.
And then you need to feel also like you're working with each other. We're cooperative species. We need to be working towards the same goal. So we have to have those collective connections as well, which some people find through work. I wouldn't necessarily encourage that. But like, you can support a cause that you're behind and start volunteering or find other people who care about it or start a podcast.
Working towards a common goal is really good for your mental health.
It definitely is. So having those collective connections, that is another element to it. So when you recognize and understand the situation, respond by focusing on those three levels. And if you have any trouble reaching connection at all in any of those three levels. Flip the script, folks. Use that biological heritage to your advantage. We are where we are today, not because one person made it there and lifted the rest of us up. We got here mm-hmm. because we worked together. So, like, think about in the terms of what makes a good person, what makes a stellar person. And that is usually tied back to their willingness to give to others, or their caring, or their thinking of other people. Like, everybody knows that one person that remembers their birthday, and it makes you feel good, right? Mm-hmm. So start there. Even if you don't make friends instantly, or you don't have relationships to fall on, like, start with taking care of other people. Even if you don't get anything out of it right away, you're going to feel good, because that is our true imperative, is to take care of each other. So just doing that, even if you don't, quote unquote, get anything out of it instantly, you're going to feel good about doing it.
Yeah. It's this, you know, same thing about donating to charities and stuff. It gives the person who's done the donating a lift.
Yes.
I don't know that donating is really going to, like, help your loneliness factor, because you're just money on a screen. But making connections with people, taking care of people, volunteering at a soup kitchen, you know, just whatever you can do to physically get in front of people and help them out is going to go a long way.
Well, yeah, even just taking it upon yourself to be the person who remembers birthdays.
Yeah, that too. Even that simple. Yeah.
Put it in your calendar and then text somebody, and you're going to feel great, because you're going to feel connected to them. And mm-hmm. if you literally have nowhere in your life to start and you need, like, square one, someone to connect with, I would suggest getting involved with some kind of, like, nursing home or old folks home, because old people are always looking for someone to talk to. And I think they have really cool stories. It's very interesting to hear about how the culture has shifted and changed. I would really suggest talking to an old person, and they're not going to reject you.
Because they have no one else.
Exactly. Exactly. So the moral of the story here is, the next time you feel lonely, truly recognize it as the signal of what it is, which is a signal like hunger or thirst or cold or hot. And don't hate yourself for feeling it. It's a biological imperative. And then go out there and get that social snack so that you can resolve the issue. And that is where I'm going to leave loneliness for now, because this was a lot. This was a mouth. This was my TED Talk. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
If I'm going to get a social snack, can I also get a cheesecake snack or an ice cream snack?
Definitely. I'm going to go get a Domino snack.
I mean, we all bond over food. Go out, have a social snack, and get a real snack. Bond over that cheeseburger. Am I hungry right now? I think that's what's happening.
I think it is. It's that time of night where we each get our own snack and we call it a night. We're done socializing. We're done social snacking. Let's get to the real snacking and to the other biological imperatives of eating and going to sleep.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today. This was a fun one. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. And remember, you should do a ton of things if you are a real socialite. That's our new name. We decided.
A socialite of the Impolite Society.
Yeah, we took a long time. It's been, what, a year or more in the making? We finally decided what we're going to call the fans, the socialites. So if you are a real socialite, you know that you should rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You should send us an email with your rude questions at rude@impolitesocietypodcast.com. And you can follow us on all of our socials, on the Facebook, on the Instagram, on the TikTok, on the Twitter, which we barely ever do. All these different things that you can connect with us to let us know you're listening and let us know what you think.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode of Impolite Society. But for now, remember always to stay rude and march to the beat of your own drum. Boom. And it's time to cut this off. Goodbye.